Welcome to the Golden Age of Comic Books. Hey, Golden Age fans, it's November 19th, 2006, and this is the 47th installment of the Golden Age of Comic Books. This is Bill Jourdain, your host. I'm glad you're here. Well, we've got a good show coming up before the 47th installment of the GAC. This week, we're going to talk about the Golden Age Doll Man, who was published in Feature Comics and in his own book, Doll Man Quarterly, by Quality Publications. So stay tuned for that. And then I'm going to have a special segment at the end of the Golden Age of Comic Books for this episode. And I'm not going to spoil a surprise, but something a little bit different than we haven't done before. And I hope you enjoy it. So stay tuned for the end of the podcast, and we'll have a little special segment at the end of the show. So let's jump right in and talk about a character that I've wanted to do a podcast about for some time, ever since reading some of his early adventures, and that is the Golden Age Doll Man. Just who was the Golden Age Doll Man? Where did he appear? Where did he come from? And why did he figure prominently during the Golden Age of comic books? Well, the Golden Age Doll Man made his very first appearance in Feature Comics number 27. That was the December 1939 issue, so a pretty early character in the history of the Golden Age of comic books, really just about a year and a half after the first appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1. Feature Comics had been around for a while. It was first called Feature Funnies, and the first issue of that book was published in October of 1937, and it ran for 20 issues until May of 1939. And then the title was changed to Feature Comics with issue number 21. That was the June 1939 issue, and it ran all the way through May of 1950 with issue number 144. But it was a pretty popular book. It started out being a strip reprint book, had a lot of humor strips reprinted in it. And the focus of the book changed with issue number 27, with the first adventure of Doll Man. Now, who created Doll Man and who was responsible for the majority of his early adventures? Well, interestingly, Doll Man was created by none other than the great Will Eisner, who most of you know created the wonderful superhero known as the Spirit. And Eisner, with his shop, did the writing chores on a number of the first Doll Man appearances. Well, if you've ever read any of the early Doll Man stories, you've probably noticed that it wasn't Will Eisner, but someone named William Irwin Maxwell, who actually had the byline for the Doll Man stories. Well, believe it or not, Eisner used William Irwin Maxwell as his pen name for his Doll Man stories. Now, even though Eisner was just a fantastic artist in his own right, he wrote those first Doll Man stories, but he did not actually do the pencils and inks on those first Doll Man stories. And those were done by the great Lou Fine, who most of you know was involved in a number of wonderful comic book endeavors over the years, including doing work on the Spirit for Eisner when Eisner went off to World War II. But Fine did some wonderful artistic chores on Doll Man and his earliest adventures, starting with the first appearance of Doll Man in Feature Comics number 27 and going all the way through issue number 37. That was the October 1940 issue. That was Fine's last work on Doll Man. Various artists worked on the character until issue number 44. That was the May 1941 issue. And from issue number 44 all the way through issue number 63, the great Reed Crandall took over penciling and inking the Doll Man stories that were still, for the most part, being written by Will Eisner. But the great Reed Crandall was involved in the artistic chores. Crandall, of course, went on to do all kinds of great comic book work, most notably work for EC Comics and their horror books and others throughout the Golden Age of comic books. So, who was Doll Man, and how did his adventures go during the Golden Age of comic books? Well, Doll Man was a chemist named Darryl Dane. We have so many Golden Age superheroes who were involved in the sciences, either through chemistry or some other type of science, and Dollman was no different. And he studied under a professor named Roberts, and along with the help of Professor Roberts in the first story that appeared in Feature Comics number 27, Darryl Dayne perfected a formula that would allow him to shrink in size down to about the size of, yes, you guessed it, a doll. And although he could only take one size when he shrunk down, he could only shrink down to about 6 inches tall, although at different times during the Golden Age of comic books, he might have been a foot tall or 2 feet tall. It was generally known that he was about 6 inches tall, and that was it. He could not shrink any more than that, like the Atom could from DC Comics and other superheroes over the years who could shrink down in size. But he had one size, and luckily for him as a superhero, one size was good enough. And he would shrink down into his 6-inch form and retain the strength that he would have as a normal-sized man, although in his first episode, Professor Roberts actually told him that he had the size of a 6-inch doll, but he had the strength of 20 men when he fought. So not really sure how it all ended up throughout the course of the Golden Age of comic books, but he did have at least the strength of a normal man when he was 6 inches tall. And he would fight crime in that form throughout the Golden Age of comic books. Now, of course, there were other supporting characters. Most notably, there was Professor Roberts' daughter, Martha Roberts, who, coincidentally, was also Darryl Dayne's fiance. And that set up the very first adventure of the Doll Man from Feature Comics number 27. And in that story, we find Professor Roberts and Darryl Dayne and Martha Roberts all sitting around the study in Professor Roberts' home. And Dayne and Roberts are talking about the formula that Dayne has been trying to perfect. And as Professor Roberts gives him a pointer or two about what he might do to finally make that formula work, the phone rings and Martha Roberts goes into the other room and takes the call from a mysterious person who, it turns out, is a blackmailer named Falco, who has been blackmailing Martha Roberts for some letters that she had written to a love interest back when she was in college. And we don't really know the totality of that story, but that set things up, as you might imagine, for the Doll Man to go into action later in the story. And then we go back to the laboratory where Darryl Dayne and Professor Roberts are working on this formula. And sure enough, Professor Roberts' suggestions work. And Darryl Dayne takes this formula and he drinks it and immediately shrinks down to 6 inches tall. Unfortunately, his clothes don't shrink with him and he ends up wrapping a loincloth around him. But that's his uniform, at least for this first episode. But unfortunately, there's a side effect to this formula in the first episode, and that side effect never manifests itself again, at least as far as I know, in any other stories of the Doll Man. But he is temporarily crazy, and he has a crazed look in his eyes. And while Professor Roberts is attempting to communicate with him, he grabs a syringe off the counter and throws it like a spear directly at Professor Roberts, striking him in the arm, and for some reason, it knocks Professor Roberts down, and he is unconscious for a short period of time. And then his fiancée, Martha, comes into the room and finds her father unconscious on the floor. And at about that moment, Darryl Dayne regains his senses and is no longer crazed by this formula and tells Martha, "Hey, I'm your fiancée. Here I am at 6 inches tall," and she's not quite sure what to say. About that time, Professor Roberts regains his senses and asks Darryl Dayne what his intentions are to do with this formula. Is he going to be evil or is he going to be good? And of course, Darryl Dayne says he's going to fight for good if he can, using these powers that he has to shrink himself down. And I guess the rest, as they say, is history. Now, about that time, Martha Roberts, having talked to the blackmailer Falco, indicated to Darryl Dayne that she has to leave and go out for a while, but she does so in such a way that it causes Daryl Dane, the doll man, to be a little bit suspicious about maybe what might be going on, that she might be in some type of trouble. And so as she leaves the house, he bounces out the door, 6 inches tall, and jumps onto the back bumper of her car and hangs on and follows her to where she's meeting with Falco to pay him more blackmail money. Well, when Daryl Dane arrives and figures out what's going on and that this is the blackmailer who is going to blackmail his fiance, he goes into action as the mighty midget, if you will, and beats Falco up pretty good, even though he's only 6 inches tall, including Falco trying to stomp on him with his foot and Dane grabbing him and flipping him over onto his back. And Falco runs away and decides it's just not worth blackmailing Martha Roberts any longer. And so that's how the very first story of Doll Man ends. Now, at the end of this story, Doll Man is still 6 inches tall. He has not grown back to his normal height, and he's not wearing any type of a uniform. And we're left to wonder whether he will be able to regain his normal size after this adventure, or if Martha is going to marry this guy who's 6 inches tall, which presents all kinds of interesting questions about that marriage. But thankfully, in the next issue of Feature Comics, issue number 28, that would be the January 1940 issue, the story begins with Daryl Dane being his normal size again. And they don't really explain how he got back to his normal size, whether he took the formula and drank it again or just regained it after some period of time. Also in this story, in issue number 28 of Feature Comics, Daryl Dane, when he does turn into Doll Man, has a uniform. We later learned that his uniform, which is a little pixie-like uniform, it's a gymnastics-type uniform with no legs, kind of like Robin the Boy Wonder, little red cape, little pixie boots. We find out that that costume was actually sewn for him by his fiancée Martha Roberts. And we don't know why the costume just magically appears on his body when he shrinks down. All of those questions were left unanswered. But in issue number 28, he doesn't drink a formula to shrink himself down. He actually takes a pill. And we don't know if he has somehow created a pill from his formula that he had in the first issue or how that all has taken place. And then in issue number 30, when he appears again, he actually turns into Doll Man a third way. This way is with a syringe. He injects himself with the formula to make himself 6 inches tall and Doll Man. And then in subsequent adventures, probably due to the fact that it would be very complicated to have him either taking a pill or drinking a fluid or injecting himself with a syringe, from that point forward, the Doll Man turns into Doll Man simply by thinking about it. He will be shown in his full size, and then it simply says in the panel, and now Daryl Dane changes himself into Doll Man, and it shows him shrinking down. His street clothes remain behind in their normal size, all folded up on the floor, and the Doll Man appears in his uniform next to the clothes. So a lot of confusion there and no real great explanation, but nevertheless, the Doll Man does succeed in changing back and forth into the 6-inch Doll Man and back into his normal size as Daryl Dane. Now, Doll Man continued his adventures in the pages of Feature Comics all the way through issue number 139. That's the October 1949 issue, and his adventures were pretty exciting and all revolved around, of course, his ability to change sizes and fight as the mighty mite or the mighty midget against the forces of evil. Doll Man was so popular for Quality Comics that in the fall of 1941, he got his own title. That was Doll Man Quarterly, the first issue, as I mentioned, fall of 1941. And that title continued all the way through issue number 47 in October of 1953. Interestingly, there was a gap of about 3 years in Doll Man Quarterly. The last issue, number 7, that was the fall of 1943 issue, had about a 3-year gap with issue number 8. Issue number 8 did not come out until the spring of 1946. I don't know why there was a 3-year gap in Doll Man Quarterly during 1943 to 1946, but there was a gap nevertheless. And then in the spring of 1946, with issue number 8, a big event occurred in the pages of the Doll Man book. It was not having to do anything with Doll Man. Instead, it was the very first appearance of the great Bill Ward's Torchy. If any of you are familiar with Good Girl Art, then you'll know who Torchy is. And you'll be happy to know that she made her first appearance by the great Bill Ward in the pages of Doll Man Quarterly, number 8. Now, Doll Man Quarterly became Doll Man Comics and continued all the way through issue number 47. That was the October 1953 issue. There were a couple of notable events that occurred in the pages of Doll Man Comics, most notably with issue number 37. That was the December 1951 issue, where there was a battle with one of Doll Man's enemies known as the Skull, not the Red Skull from Captain America fame, but just the Skull. Martha Roberts became Doll Girl in that particular issue, and it's not quite known exactly how she became Doll Girl. I believe that she also was able to take the formula that Daryl Dane had created way back in 1939 to become Doll Girl, but she made her first appearance as that superhero. She went by the name Midge, the Doll Girl, starting in December of 1951 and continued in the pages of Doll Man Comics throughout its run until 1953. Another notable addition into the world of Doll Man was with issue number 31. That was the December 1950 issue. And in that story, you have the introduction of Elmo the Wonder Dog, a German Shepherd dog. Now, if you have listened to Comics Cast, where I made a guest appearance and talked about Ace the Bat Hound, you'll know all about Super Dogs and Wonder Dogs and German Shepherd Dogs that appeared in the Golden Age of comic books. But Elmo the Wonder Dog made his first appearance in December of 1950 and was sort of a sidekick to Doll Man. Doll Man would actually ride Elmo the Wonder Dog like a horse when Doll Man was shrunk down to his doll size. And Elmo assisted him in fighting crime in the pages of Doll Man Comics. Now, Doll Man's last Golden Age appearances were in the 139th edition of Feature Comics. That was the October 1949 issue. As I mentioned, that book continued on through issue number 144, but the Doll Man's last appearance in that title was issue number 139. The Doll Man's very last Golden Age appearance was in his own title, Doll Man Comics, and that was issue number 47. That was the October 1953 issue. And with the publication of number 47, Doll Man disappeared from the Golden Age of comics like so many other superheroes did in the early to mid 1950s. Subsequent to Doll Man Comics number 47, and shortly after the middle 1950s, DC Comics ultimately purchased all of the Quality Comics characters, and we'll talk about what they did with some of those characters in just a little while. Now, if you want to go and read some of the early Doll Man stories, in fact, the earliest Doll Man stories from the pages of Feature Comics, there is a good source that you can go out and get to do that. And that is a publication called the Lou Fine Reader. It was published by Pure Imagination out of New York City in 2003. I believe that book is still available, probably from the publisher. I picked up a copy from Bud Plant Comics at their website. It has a $25 cover price, and as the title suggests, it reprints a lot of Lou Fine early Golden Age work that appeared in Quality Comics magazines and others. And for instance, what you'll find in this particular book are reprints of a lot of the early Doll Man features, but some other stuff as well. You'll find reprints of a strip by Fine called The Diary of Dr. Hayward from July 12 to October 23rd of 1939. You'll find reprints of a story of The Flame, another superhero from Wonder World Comics number 6, Doll Man's first appearance from Feature Comics number 27, another story of The Flame, and then you'll find the next four or five Doll Man stories from Feature Comics, and then you'll find an Uncle Sam story from National Comics, and some additional stories of the Black Condor and the Ray and one other Doll Man comic from Feature Comics. So you'll find some very interesting Lou Fine work in this book. It's certainly worth the $25 to get it. You might be able to find it discounted. This is a black and white reprint that is not in color, but still it's a great way to read some of the early adventures of Doll Man and some of the other notable superheroes that Lou Fine was responsible for during the Golden Age of comic books. Now, if you'll bear with me a minute, I'll do a little bit of an impromptu market report. And I'm going to limit this market report to the topic at hand, and of course that is Doll Man. So let's talk a little bit about some Doll Man and Feature Comics books that have sold on the Heritage Auction Gallery's website in the last couple of months. First of all, I found a copy of Feature Comics number 27, the very first appearance of Doll Man. That book was graded VG Plus 4.5. This was their September 9th, 2006 auction. And that book sold for $1,792.50. And by the way, the first appearance of Doll Man in Feature Comics number 27 in Near Mint and the Overstreet price guide is around $7,000, just to give you something to compare that particular price that I mentioned from the Heritage auction to the actual price guide price that you might find in the Overstreet price guide. I found a copy of Feature Comics number 30. Feature Comics number 30 was the very first cover appearance of Doll Man. That was the March 1940 issue of that title. And the Larson copy, a very fine Near Mint 9.0 copy, was also sold on September 9th, 2006 auction for $2,031.50. I don't believe I've ever mentioned the Larson pedigree copies on this particular podcast. I know there have been some articles written about that pedigree collection in the past, but the Larson copy of the first cover appearance of Doll Man did sell back in September. I found a Mile High copy of Doll Man Quarterly number 8. Of course, I mentioned that was the first issue after the 3-year gap in the Doll Man title. That 1946 issue was graded by CGC at Near Mint 9.2, and it sold for $4,481.25. Now, if you remember what I mentioned earlier, that was also the first appearance of Torchy by Bill Ward, and I'm assuming that that high price was realized not because of the fact that it was a Doll Man issue, but because of the fact that it was, in fact, the first appearance of Torchy. Now, last but not least in the market report, I did want to mention something that I saw on the Heritage Auction Gallery's website that relates to Doll Man that I thought was pretty cool. In fact, we recently had a discussion about this type of bound volume of comic books over on the forum at Comic Geek Speak, but they had at auction a bound set of Feature Comics issues 40 through 51. That was the January through December 1941 run of Feature Comics, of course all featuring Doll Man stories. Pretty cool. It's a bound volume. The books had three hole punches in them in addition to being bound in booklet form with a binder. So that was a really neat find. It was part of the John McLaughlin collection that I've mentioned in a previous podcast. Just a fantastic high-grade collection. As I mentioned before, McLaughlin had amassed the largest single collection of Mile High copies of Golden Age books that any private collector had, and a lot of those have now been sold by Heritage. But this collection had this bound volume, and it sold at auction in their November 15, 2006 auction just a few days ago for $1,314.50. Interestingly, they indicated that the VG 4.0 value for the entire group of comics that were bound in that book was $908, so it actually sold more than what would have been the price guide price for those particular books. So a little impromptu market report there about Dollman and Feature Comics that'll give you a little perspective on what those books may be selling for today. So, what happened to Dollman after the Golden Age of comic books when he went off into a hiatus in 1953? Well, as I mentioned, DC Comics did purchase a lot of the quality characters, and in 1973, in the November-December issue of Justice League of America, that was issue number 107, DC Comics brought back some of the quality characters, including Dollman, and with that book, they brought back a group of characters that they said were on Earth X. If you're familiar with Crisis and Pre-Crisis and Post-Crisis and all that good stuff, you know what I'm talking about. But these characters, the quality characters, Dollman, Uncle Sam, the Ray, Black Condor, the Human Bomb, and Phantom Lady were all brought back in the pages of Justice League of America 107, and in the continuation of that story in issue number 108, which was the January-February 1974 issue. A couple years later, DC decided to bring those characters back yet again, and they had a title that they published called Freedom Fighters. Issue number one was the March-April 1976 issue that ran through number 15, which was the July-August 1978 issue. And again, Dollman, Uncle Sam, the Ray, Black Condor, the Human Bomb, and Phantom Lady all appeared in that title as the Freedom Fighters. And of course, if any of you read current comics, you'll know that these characters have once again been resurrected by DC in a title called Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters. Issue number one came out in September of 2006, and the latest issue was number four, the December 2006 issue. And of course, those characters have made other appearances since being revived in 1973, but those were the main titles in which they have appeared throughout the course of the Silver Age and Modern Age of comic books. Well, I hope you've enjoyed learning a little bit about Dollman, a character who was probably the very first midget superhero. Of course, there have been many others over the years, but Dollman was certainly the first, created by the great Will Eisner, originally drawn by the great Lou Fine, and then by the great Reed Crandall and others over the years. So go check out the Lou Fine Reader to look at the earliest adventures of Dollman, and I'm sure there are other reprints out there. If any of you are familiar with those, please let me know, and I'll be sure to post that information at the blog page. All right, well, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that at the conclusion of the podcast for the 47th installment of the Golden Age of Comic Books, I was going to have a special segment. Well, let me tell you what that is. Back a few days ago, I had picked up a recorder that I had gotten for Christmas last year, and I was experimenting with it, a little portable tape recorder that I might want to use for podcasting or other types of recording away from the computer that I use to record the Golden Age of comic books. And I had a couple of microphones hooked up to the recording device as I was experimenting with it. And my son Will came into the room, and we both got those microphones going, and we started talking about Golden Age comic books. We were sitting here in the room where I record the podcast, where a lot of the DC archives that I have are on the shelves, and other reprint sources and other comics that I have are on the shelves. And we just sort of had a little jam session, if you will, talking about Golden Age comic books. So I thought it was kind of cool that my 16-year-old son and I had a pretty good discussion about Golden Age comic books. Thought it was pretty neat that my 16-year-old knew about Golden Age comic books and some of the characters and the stories and their histories. So I thought I would replay that segment here on the Golden Age of comic books. I hope you all enjoy this segment, Bill and Will talking about Golden Age comic books.
All right, so is Green Lantern your favorite Golden Age character, or is it someone else, like, hint, hint, Batman?
Well, see, it's a very delicate subject, I know. And I really can't choose. I don't know, it's just hard, because, you know, Green Lantern is cool, Batman is cool, Superman is cool. It's just almost, it's nearly impossible to choose between them.
Well, you have read the Golden Age Batman archives.
Yes.
You have read the Golden Age Green Lantern archives.
I have.
You have read some of the Golden Age Superman archives.
Yep.
Have you read The Spirit?
No, I have not.
Well, that's blasphemy. If you're going to be the son of the guy who does the Golden Age of Comic Books podcast, you need to read The Spirit.
I know, I got to do it.
Because that's cool stuff. But anyway, you've read Batman and Superman and Green Lantern. Have you read The Golden Age Flash?
Most of it, yes.
You read Plastic Man.
I read all of Plastic Man for whatever reason. I just hit it off on Plastic Man, and I read all of them in like 2 days.
So a lot of people like Plastic Man. A lot of people are buying those Golden Age Plastic Man archives.
He's fun, man. I don't know. He's not anything spectacular. He's just fun to read about. The way he bends around and turns himself into trash cans and stuff. He's fun to read.
So you like the trashy Plastic Man.
Oh, you're funny. He's just fun to read. He's entertaining.
Okay, so you like to, right, of all of those that you've read, though, you still think the Golden Age Green Lantern is your favorite?
Green Lantern, Batman, you know, it's like I said, you can't make me choose. It's just way too hard.
Okay, now, that's all fine and good, because for the most part, that's DC stuff, or at least, Plastic Man really wasn't DC back then, but he is now. What about the Marvel stuff? About, like, the Golden Age Human Torch and the Golden Age?
I was just thinking about that earlier, and, you know, I was thinking, Marvel has... You know, they've got some good characters. They've got the Spider-Man. But I was also thinking, they don't have nearly as many really well-known characters.
You're talking about Golden Age characters.
Golden Age characters, yeah. They were around in the Golden Age. You got Spidey, of course.
Well, Spidey wasn't around in the Golden Age.
Wasn't he?
No, he's a Silver Age character.
He is. Oh, okay. Well, then,
The most popular of the Golden Age superheroes from Marvel are the Human Torch, Submariner.
Submariner,
and Captain America.
Captain America, of course.
Captain America came around in 1940. And the Human Torch isn't the same Human Torch as with the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. What I'm thinking about is, you know, when it comes up in conversation, you say a character, and, you know, someone goes, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, you got Batman. Everybody knows Batman. Superman. Everybody knows Superman.
And everybody knows Spider-Man.
Everybody knows Spider-Man, but like you said, he's not Golden Age, but still. And then you've got Captain America, of course. Everybody knows Captain America. Submariner, a lot of people know him, a lot of people don't. And then Human Torch, thank you, Fantastic Four movie, everybody thinks of him in that fashion, but, you know, he also had his own, but at least everybody knows him, so.
Well, you know who my favorite Golden Age superhero is?
Oh, gee. Let me see, this is a hard question. Would that be,
Uncle Scrooge.
Of course.
No. Batman.
Of course.
Batman, because he didn't have any superpowers, he was just, you know, the guy could fight, the guy was smart, had a lot of money, and he could do all those things without having superpowers.
He's like the guy that all the kids are like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool? You know, Superman is like, oh, he's cool, but you can pretend to be him, but there's no way you could ever actually, you know, hope to be Superman. But with Batman, you know, he's a far-fetched, attainable goal.
Sure, you learn how to fight, you learn how to be a detective, and you hope somebody leaves you billions of dollars.
Of course.
And you can be Batman.
Benefactor father, yeah.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of cool Golden Age characters other than DC and Marvel, too. Of course, Plastic Man is one we've talked about. He wasn't a Golden Age DC character at the time, but got a lot of other cool characters. You know, the Hangman that I've talked about is kind of like Batman, and so many others that are out there, but... What about Captain Marvel? Have you read any of these wonderful Shazam archives or any of that stuff we have?
Not really.
Here on
the I read about half the first one. My main exposure to Captain Marvel was in
Kingdom Come.
Kingdom Come. Yes, he that was really my main exposure. And by that time, he was already at DC.
He was sort of the enigma at the beginning of that Kingdom Come run, and then he ended up being the big hero at the end of it.
Yeah,
he saved the day. But, you know, it's funny, back in the Golden Age, Captain Marvel was actually more popular in terms of readership and all that than Superman was.
Really?
And then DC and Fawcett, that published Captain Marvel and Shazam, and Captain Marvel got into that big lawsuit. And
ended up having to give up rights to DC.
Yeah, and that was really at the end of the Golden Age anyway. The superheroes were waning, and people weren't as interested in the superheroes as they had been. So I think it was easy for Fawcett to... toss in the towel and say, okay, you know, we'll let DC win, and ultimately DC ended up buying the
whole thing,
the Marvel family characters and all that. So, but it was interesting. I think those stories, if you like Plastic Man and some of the goofiness that you see in the Plastic Man stories, you probably like some of the stuff you find in Captain Marvel, because it was a whole lot goofier than Superman was.
Yeah, and I can see where the appeal would come in, because once again, he was another character that, you know, He's a kid, and he said Shazam, and he turned into, you know, this big, awesome guy. And you see how kids would dig that.
Yeah. Well, and he was a magical character. Superman was a science fiction, an alien character.
As was Superman.
Yeah, and then, of course...
Is that what you said? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry.
What did I say?
I don't know. I thought you said Batman, and then I said Superman. You may have said Superman as well.
If I said Batman, I meant to say Superman. But anyway, we could do who's on first now and probably confuse everybody.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think the cool thing about Shazam or Captain Marvel rather versus Superman is Superman's one weakness, of course, was magic in addition to kryptonite.
Mm, yep.
And so it's interesting just to see the magical superhero versus the alien superhero and all that. So, have you read The Sandman, The Golden Age Sandman, or The Golden Age Spectre, or
actually,
Starman?
I have read a little bit of The Sandman, not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember a lot of it. It was a while ago, but some of it.
Yeah, that's a lot different than the modern Sandman that was done in recent years, but interesting stuff, interesting perspective on things, and of course the Spectre is sort of an interesting character too, a different kind of character than you find, a mystical character, a ghost, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of cool stuff out there that's, you know, different. What about All-Star? Did you ever read any of the All-Star comics?
Yeah, once again, a few, but, I mean, good Lord, those books up there are about, you know, what, the whole thing up there. So I read a couple of them, and I kind of moved on, but they're good.
Well, there are 12 volumes up there of All-Star. All-Star Volume 0 has All-Star comics prior to the JSA getting started.
Yeah,
the characters appeared in their separate stories, and then
you can tell that one looks a lot smaller.
Yeah, starting with issue number one, then you get starting with All-Star Comics number three, and you go all the way through the end of the run with the volume 11 up there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff, and that was so groundbreaking and trend-setting with the superhero team-ups and all that.
Oh yeah,
pretty cool stuff. So
even still today, you know, they're still doing all sorts of stuff like that. The team-ups, it's. Everybody loves to see superheroes get together and fight crime together.
Yeah. What I think is cool is that you're 16 years old and you probably know as much about Golden Age superheroes as you do about Silver Age superheroes or Modern Age superheroes, and that's cool because there are not a lot of 16-year-olds around that I know of who are well-versed in Golden Age superheroes.
You know, that's what I get with growing up with you as my dad, you know, because I was just around it the whole time, and it's awesome. I love it. I just love to know about it and to read it and to talk about it and all that stuff.
Well, and you actually listen to my podcast too, which is amazing in and of itself, that you would actually sit and listen to me talk for 30 minutes.
No, it's good. I like it. And you know, every now and then I'll come in and actually sit and listen to the thing as it's being recorded and all that. So.
Yeah. Well, we're going to make you the spokesperson for teenagers for the Golden Age of comic books.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd like to see more younger readers get into the Golden Age of comic books.
It's you know, people just don't realize how cool, they see the movies, and that's about as much exposure as they get, but if people would just realize how much more there is when you get past the movies, you know, you get past the movies and you've just got these near endless stories about these characters that they get so involved in with the movies, and if they just knew, it would be, you know, if give people exposure to it, and they find out, and I'm sure the populace of readers would spike enormously.
Well, and luckily DC has really in the last, I guess, 10 or 12, probably 12 or 13 years, done a great job putting out all these Golden Age archives. So the information's out there, although at $50 a pop retail, it's not going to appeal to the wider audience, but now they're doing the Superman Chronicles and the Batman Chronicles. I think they're getting ready to come out with the second volume of Superman Chronicles, and the second volume of the Batman Chronicles just came out, where in a trade paperback form, they're reprinting in color all of the Batman Golden Age stories from Detective 27 in order. In other words, as they appeared, first in Detective, Batman, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You can read them in the order that they were appearing on the newsstands. And they're doing the same thing with Superman.
That's
so
really
that's kind of cool. I don't think they've ever put anything out like that before, where you can sit down and read the stories that actually came out in the order they came out. So that's another great way and a cheaper way for folks to get those Golden Age stories of the two most popular Golden Age superheroes, and I hope we see that more with some of the other stuff, because that'll hopefully widen the readership a little bit, broaden the base of people.
Yeah, and if, you know, big books, you know, big, you know, paperback or hardcover books aren't your deal, go to a convention and snag some reader copies, some cheap, you know, $2, $3, $5 reader copy books, and read those.
You know, if I can go to a convention and find some $2, $3, and $5 Golden Age reader copies.
You know what I mean, though. Come on. I know. $2 and $3, $5 reader copies of anything.
Of anything.
Of anything Golden Age or, you know, don't exist.
Well, they do if they're coverless or centerfoldless or torn to pieces or whatever, but they used to be that way. I remember many, many years ago, you could go to stores like the old comic book store in Atlanta called the Paper Chase. When I was in college, and they had stacks and stacks of original old Batman comics and Detective Comics, and back probably in the, I guess, the early 80s, they'd even let you sit there and read them if you wanted to, which, of course, nobody would do now.
No, they're now too you valuable. This is not a library. Please buy and don't read.
Well, my old roommate, Danny, who you know, he had a pile of old EC comics, original EC comics.
Oh, yeah?
And he would let me sit and read when we were in college. I would sit and read his original ECs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we didn't worry then about wrecking them or ruining them or anything like that. We just sat, and we were careful with them, and we'd read them. And
didn't use them as coasters or anything?
No, we didn't do that.
Jot notes on them or anything
No, never did that. But we had some Golden Age superhero books that he had that we'd sit and read, and all kinds of really cool stuff. But nowadays, nobody wants to pull out, I guess you want to, but nobody's going to pull out an original high-grade Golden Age comic book, or even a mid-grade Golden Age comic book to read out of fear of damaging it and ruining the value of it. So that's why it's nice to have all these reprints and the scans on the computers and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, although, like you've been saying, reading scans on the computer can be tiring and taxing.
Yes, it's hard on the eyes. Particularly 45-year-old eyes, kind of hard on them. So.
Yeah, well.
Anyway. Well, I'm glad we got to talk about Golden Age comic books.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, there you heard it. Bill and Will talking about Golden Age comic books. I hope you enjoyed that little impromptu discussion that we had about the Golden Age of comic books and some of our favorite characters and some of the books that we've both read. And I hope more younger readers will read more Golden Age comic books through reprints that are out there, the Chronicles that DC's doing now, and other sources that are out there certainly will broaden that base and hopefully give everyone a little bit more of a history lesson and an appreciation of the origins of these characters and how they came about way, way, way back then when their grandfathers were reading comic books. So thanks to Will for being on the show and participating with me about a little discussion about the Golden Age of comic books. All right, well, that's going to do it for the 47th installment of the Golden Age of comic books for November 19th, 2006. I hope you all enjoyed learning a little bit about the Doll Man presented by Quality Comics way back in the Golden Age. And once again, I hope you enjoyed listening to Will and Bill talk about Golden Age comic books a little bit. Please don't forget to support the Grand Comic Book Database Project at comics.org in their continuing effort to catalog each and every comic book that has ever been created. They're really coming along in an amazing fashion. I tell you what, I was over there looking at some of the stuff they have on the website in preparing for this podcast, and it's just incredible the amount of cover images that have now been uploaded to that website, the amount of stories that have been indexed, and other invaluable information that's out there about comic books generally, and in particular, the Golden Age of comic books. So check out their website at comics.org. I know you won't be disappointed with that. Don't forget to support the Hero Initiative. You can go to their website at heroinitiative.org. I mentioned in our last podcast about the art auction that's going on to benefit the Hero Initiative. You can go to michaelkelleher.com. There'll be, of course, a link to that website in the show notes, and check out some of the original art that is being auctioned that Michael created for some of the Masterworks volumes. I think it's very impressive. A lot of it's already been sold now, I noticed, from going over to the website, but there is still some left, at least at the time that I was recording the podcast. So check that out. I think you'll really enjoy looking at some of those recreations that Michael did. Please don't forget to visit us over at the Golden Age of Comic Books forum at Comic Geek Speak. You can go to the forum at comicgeekspeak.com, and you'll find listed there the Golden Age of Comic Books podcast forum. That's where you want to go to read comments about this particular podcast or other podcast. That's where you want to go to post comments about this podcast or just generally talk about Golden Age comic books. We get into some fairly lively debates from time to time over there. Of course, there's not only the Golden Age of Comic Books forum, there's the main Comic Geek Speak forum, Comics Cast has a forum, the Collected Comics Library podcast has a forum, Raging Bullets has a forum, and all the other comic book podcasts have forums there. So check it out. It's just a wonderful community where you can go and chat about comic books, any kind of comic books you might be interested in. So check that out. Don't forget, we have an email address, goldenagecomics@gmail.com. Send me an email if you don't want to post at the forum, and I'll be glad to share any thoughts you might have about this podcast or the Golden Age of comic books generally. I certainly appreciate all the emails I have received over the last year and almost a half that I've been doing the Golden Age of Comic Books podcast. It's amazing to me how many fans are out there about Golden Age comic books generally. It's just great to see that so many folks love the old art form, if you will. Not necessarily in lieu of the new art form, but certainly appreciate the history of the Golden Age of comic books. So that's going to do it for this week, everybody. I want to thank you once again for joining us on the Golden Age of comic books for the 47th installment. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and I look forward to talking to each and every one of you next time about Golden Age comic books.